attention? It's not a competition, Honor, I say. He can be friends with more than one person. She laughs and takes a drink of her soda.
Friends?
She says, placing the can back down on the table. Is that what you call it?
Honor, Sagan says. We talked about this.
They did? Why? What did they talk about? Honor shakes her head. Just because you make out with her doesn't mean you know her like I do. I can feel my anger smash against my chest with nowhere to go but out. I want to scream at her, but I try to keep my composure in front of Moby.
What's make out?
Moby asks. Hey, Luck says, standing up. Let's go to your room, Moby. Thankfully, he grabs Moby's hand and pulls him out of the kitchen, but not before Moby grabs his plate and takes it with him. Honor is still staring at me from across the table.
Where is all this hostility coming from? I ask, frustrated. I assumed you'd be a little more sympathetic.
Oh, please, she says, scooting her chair back. She stands up.
If it was the truth, you would have said something when it happened. Why would Utah do something like that to you and not to me?
My jaw is tight and my teeth are grinding together as I hold back everything I want to say to her right now.
I can't believe you're taking Utah's side right now. You're calling him out when you admitted to the whole family that you tried to lose your virginity to our uncle.
Stop, Sagan says, standing up. His chair falls back and crashes against the floor. Both of you, just stop it. Too late for mediation, Sagan. I grab my glass of water and splash it in Honor's face. She gasps, wide-eyed and angry. Before I can escape, she's across the table with a handful of my hair in her fist. I scream and try to pry her hand loose, but it's useless. I grab her ponytail and yank it. Sagan's hands are around my waist, and he's trying to pull me away, but I'm halfway across the table now, and I refuse to let go until she does. Her other hand grips my T-shirt, so I pull at the front of her shirt. Several of the buttons pop off, and Sagan is still trying to break us up when someone yells, "Hey!" That sounds like Utah's voice, but I'm not really in a position to turn around and look. I don't have to, because Utah jumps on the table and tries to climb between us. He's prying Honor's hands off me, and Sagan is trying to do the same to Honor. "Stop!" Utah yells. We don't stop. I'm pretty sure a good chunk of Honor's hair is now wrapped around my fingers, but I just grab hold of more.
"Cover her mouth," Utah yells at Sagan.
Utah says this just as he clamps his hand over my mouth and nose, smothering me. Sagan is behind Honor now, covering her mouth and nose with his hand. "What the hell are they doing, trying to kill us? I can't breathe." Honor's eyes grow wide after several seconds, and we're both trying to struggle out of their grips while still refusing to let go of each other. I can't take it another second. I can't breathe. I release Honor's hair and grip Utah's hand that's covering my mouth. Honor does the same, pulling Sagan's hand away from her mouth. We're both gasping for breath when they release us.
"What the hell?" Honor says, shoving Sagan. "Are you trying to kill me?"
Sagan looks at Utah and gives him a thumbs up. Then he puts his hands on his knees and bends over, catching his breath.
"Quick thinking,"
Sagan says to Utah. I fall into my chair again, trying to catch my own breath. I pull strands of Honor's hair from my fingers.
"What's going on?"
My father is back. He's standing next to the table, which is now a chaotic mess of pizza parts. Honor's shirt is ripped, and both of us look a wild mess, but he isn't looking at any of that. He's addressing Utah, who is wiping pizza off his jeans.
"What are you doing here?"
my father asks.
"I'm calling a family meeting," Utah says.
My father shakes his head.
"Now's not a good time."
Utah laughs under his breath and says,
"If you want me to wait for the perfect time to discuss kissing my little sister, we'll be waiting for an eternity. We're having a family meeting tonight."
Utah walks past my father and heads toward his bedroom. He slams the door so hard I jump in my seat.
My father grips the back of one of the chairs and shoves it at the table so hard I jump again.
Great, Honor mutters.
She goes to her room and slams her door, too. It's just me and Sagan now. He's standing on the other side of the table, staring at me. I think he's expecting me to cry or get angry or have some sort of normal reaction to everything that just happened. I scoot my chair toward the table and reach to the only box of pizza that isn't ruined. It's ham and pineapple. Figures. Next time Honor and I fight on the kitchen table, try to salvage a box of pepperoni, will ya? Sagan does that quiet laugh of his and shakes his head. He sits down across from me and pulls the box of ham and pineapple toward him. He pulls out a slice and takes a bite. Then with a mouthful, he says, "You're kind of a badass, Merritt." It makes me smile. I don't want to be smiling at him, so I grab a slice of pizza and walk to my room with it. Then close my door. An hour later, Moby is asleep. I've washed the pizza off myself, and almost everyone in the family is seated in the living room together for the first time in years. Utah is pacing the floor, waiting on my father to join us. I'm on the couch between Sagan and Luck. I mostly scoot toward Luck so that not too many parts of me are touching Sagan. Honor and Victoria have taken both the recliners. When my father finally does walk into the room, he doesn't sit down. He leans against the wall near Jesus Christ and folds his arms over his chest. Utah inhales a deep breath like he's nervous. He can't be as nervous as I am. I know I'm trying to play it cool, but my stomach has been in knots since he walked through the door an hour ago. I don't want to talk about this, and I especially don't want to talk about it in front of the entire family. I guess that's what happens when you lay everything out in the open with a letter, though. Utah wrings his hands together and then shakes them out, still pacing the room. Now that we're all here, he finally comes to a pause, right in front of me. I don't look up at him. I just want him to hurry up and say his lame apology so we can all move on and continue to pretend that it didn't happen.
"I feel like I owe everyone an explanation," he says.
He begins pacing again, but I stare at my hands clasped in front of me. I still have black nail polish on my thumbnails left over from last month, so I pick at it.
"I was 13," he says. "Merritt was 12, and it's true. Everything she said. But that's not who I am. I was a kid, and it was stupid, and I've regretted doing it since the moment it happened."
"Then why did you do it?" I snap. I'm shocked at the anger in my voice as I continue chipping away at the polish on my thumb.
"I was confused," he says. "My friends would come to school every day and talk about girls. We were all hitting puberty, and our hormones were crazy, but I didn't care about the girls. All I could think about were the boys. I thought something was wrong with me."
He pauses in front of me again, and I know he's looking down at me, wanting me to make eye contact with him. I can't. He eventually begins pacing again.
"I thought maybe if I kissed a girl, it would fix me, but I was a kid, and I didn't know the first thing about kissing or girls. All I knew was that there was one person I wanted to kiss, and according to society, I wasn't supposed to want to kiss Logan."
I finally lift my eyes to watch Utah speak for a moment. He isn't looking at me. He's still pacing.
"I had written Logan a letter that day telling him I liked him. He showed everyone at his lunch table and then called me a queer when we were walking out of the cafeteria. I was so upset after that. I didn't want to be queer. I didn't want to like Logan. I just wanted to be what I thought was normal. So that night, I didn't even think about the consequences of what I was doing. I was desperate to fix myself, so I made Merritt kiss me, hoping it would, I don't know, cure me."
I squeeze my eyes shut. I don't want to hear any more. I don't want to go back to that moment, and I don't want to hear his excuses.
"As soon as it happened, I knew I had done something terrible. She ran out of my bedroom, and I ran to the bathroom and threw up. I was disgusted with myself. disgusted by what I did to Merritt. And I've spent every day since then regretting it, trying to make up for it. I shake my head, trying to hold back my tears. "You're a liar," I say, finally looking up at him. "You haven't done a damn thing to make up for it. You never explained yourself, and you never once apologized to me." Tears have made an appearance, so I swipe at them angrily. "Merritt," Utah says. I suck in air through my nose and then force it back out. It's an angry sound. "Please, look at me." I fall back against the couch and look up at him. He actually looks remorseful, but he has had an entire day to practice this speech. He squeezes the back of his neck and then squats down in front of me so that we're at eye level. I fold my arms over my chest and hug myself. "I am so sorry," he says. "Every day, every hour, every second since then, I've regretted that moment. And I've never apologized because..." He looks down at the floor for a moment. When he lifts his eyes back to mine, there are tears in them. "I was hoping you forgot. Praying you forgot. If I had known how much it affected you, I would have done everything I could to make up for it, and I mean that, Merritt. The fact that you remember, and you've been angry at me all these years, I can't even tell you how much regret I have." A tear slides down my chin and lands on my arm. I wipe it away with the sleeve of my shirt. "Merritt, please," he says, his voice desperate. "Please tell them I have never done anything even remotely inappropriate since that day." He looks over at Honor and stands up. "You too, Honor, tell them," he says, waving toward my father. Honor nods and looks at my father. "He's telling the truth, Dad. He's never touched me." My father looks at me and I nod too, but I can't speak yet. Too many emotions are caught in my throat, but I can tell by the look on my father's face that he wants to make sure I'm okay with Utah moving back in. Everyone is looking at me now, even Utah. I nod and manage to choke out a quiet, "I believe him." The room is quiet for a moment. Victoria eventually stands up. "Okay, then." She begins walking toward the kitchen when she turns around and says, "I'd appreciate it if you all would clean up this damn mess you made." Luck laughs under his breath. Utah faces me and mouths, "Thank you." I look away from him because I don't want him to think I'm doing him any favors. I can't just let go of years of anger simply because he apologized.
"Meeting adjourned," my father says, clapping his hands together. "You heard your stepmother. Clean up your mess."
The meeting may be adjourned, but this is just one of many issues that needs addressing in this family. We spend the next 15 minutes cleaning the kitchen in silence. I don't think any of us really know what to say. It was a very sobering family meeting. The bosses aren't used to so much honesty in one day. "How did pizza sauce end up on the window?" Luck asks, wiping the glass with a wet rag. "Looks like I missed a good fight." I close the dishwasher once it's loaded and hit the start button. Honor washes her hands in the sink next to me. "I've got pizza sauce in my bra," she says. "I'm gonna go shower." Utah walks to the pantry and grabs his box of letters. Pretty sure this will be the first time he's ever changed the marquee at night. He walks toward the door and pauses, then turns around and looks at me.
"You want to help?"
My eyes dart around the room until I find Sagan. I don't know why I look to him for reassurance. I just honestly don't think I've been alone with Utah in several years, and this all seems so strange. Sagan gives me a nod, silently telling me I should go with Utah. It isn't lost on me that I just looked to Sagan for advice. I dry my hands on a towel and walk toward the front door. When we're outside and the front door is closed, Utah smiles at me, but neither of us says anything. We just both walk in silence until we reach the marquee.
He sets the box of letters down on the ground and starts removing the letters that are already on the marquee. I walk over to the marquee and start pulling down a few of the letters.
"You have a quote you want to put on the marquee?"
he asks. I think about it for a moment and then say,
"Yeah. Yeah, I do."
He points down to the box.
"They're in alphabetical order if you want to go ahead and pull them out."
I bend down and start pulling the letters I'll need out of the box while he continues to remove the words from the marquee.
"Did you really not know I was gay?"
I laugh.
"I don't know what I thought."
He bends down and puts the last of the letters in the box.
"Does it bother you?"
I shake my head.
"Not at all."
He nods, but he doesn't look convinced. And then I remember that he's probably still thinking about the letter I wrote and all the hateful things I said to him.
"Utah, I'm serious. I don't care that you're gay. I know I said some mean things in that letter, but I was upset.
I really am sorry for that. We were kids, I know that. I've just spent years building up a lot of animosity towards you."
I pull out the last letter and place it on the ground. When I stand up, Utah stands up too.
He holds eye contact with me for a moment and then he says,
"I'm sorry too. Really, Merritt. I mean it."
The sincerity in his voice makes me feel things, and my God, I'm so sick of crying. But I do it anyway. Stupid tears start running down my cheeks, but I can't help it. I've needed to hear him say that for so long. Utah reaches for my hand and pulls me into a tight hug. My face presses against his chest, and he hugs me like a brother should hug his sister, and that makes me cry even harder. I wrap my arms around him, and as soon as I do, I can feel all the anger I've ever felt for him evaporate with every tear I shed.
"I'll be a better sibling," he says. "I promise."
I nod against his chest.
"Me too."
He releases me and then says,
"Let's finish this and go inside."
We finish up the marquee and walk toward the front door. As soon as we open it, we see Luck at the kitchen table, looking down at a piece of paper in his hands.
"You're a dick!" he yells.
Utah and I close the door.
"What now?" Utah asks, walking the box of letters back to the pantry.
Sagan is seated across from Luck, who looks extremely pissed off.
"I don't look like this."
Sagan laughs.
"Don't ask me to draw you if you're going to argue with me about how I perceive you."
Luck pushes back his chair and tosses the sketch at Sagan.
"If this is how you see me, you suck as an artist."
He walks to the refrigerator and Sagan is laughing quietly. I walk over to him and grab the sketch that pissed off Luck. I flip it over and immediately start to laugh.
"Let me see," Utah says.
I hand him the sketch of Luck and Utah bursts out in laughter.
"Wow," he says, handing the sketch back to Sagan. "You holding a grudge or something?"
Sagan grins and slips the sketch into the back of his sketchbook.
"Actually, let me keep that," Utah says. "For blackmail."
Luck walks around the bar and tries to snatch it from Utah, but Utah holds it up in the air. Luck tries to grab it again, but Utah runs down the hallway with Luck close on his heels.
"I like the marquee,"
Sagan says, pulling my attention back to him. I glance out the window at the quote I had Utah put up. Not every mistake deserves a consequence. Sometimes the only thing it deserves is forgiveness. I shrug.
"I heard it from some guy."
It's hard for me to look at him right now because so much of me still likes so much of him, and for some reason the way he's looking at me right now is the hardest to accept. Like he's proud of me. Luckily, he gets one of his urgent phone calls again. At least this time he holds up a finger and says,
"One second,"
while pulling out his phone. I don't give him his second. I just give him privacy as I make my way to my room. I've had enough for one day, and even though I slept through most of it, I'm already ready to sleep through the rest of it. When I get to my room, I realize just how literal Sagan was being when he said 1 second. He's knocking on my door almost immediately after I close it. When I open it, he's sliding his phone back into his pocket. I don't ask him why he's at my door or what he wants to talk about. I just start with the question that's been bothering me the most. Why do you get so many phone calls? He's always answering his phone, no matter what he's in the middle of. It's actually kind of rude. It's never who I want it to be, he says, walking into the room uninvited. Come in, I guess. Sagan walks around my room, looking at everything. He pauses in front of my trophy shelf. When did you start collecting these? I walk to my bed and take a seat. I stole the first one from my first boyfriend. He broke up with me in the middle of a makeout session, and it made me sad. Sagan laughs and then picks a few up and inspects them. I don't know why I like this about you as much as I do. I bite my cheek to hide my smile. Sagan sets the trophy down on the dresser and faces me. You want a tattoo? My heart skips at the thought. Right now? He nods. If you swear you won't tell anyone. I swear. I try not to smile, but I'm way too excited. Sagan nods his head toward his room, and I follow him across the hall. He pulls the desk chair close to the bed and motions for me to sit in it. He starts messing with a box of tattoo equipment that he pulls from the closet. What do you want? I don't care. You pick. He looks at me and arches an eyebrow. You want me to pick the tattoo that's going to be permanently etched into your skin for the rest of your life? I nod. Is that weird? He laughs quietly. Everything you do is weird, he says. But before I can reflect too much on that comment, he says, It's my favorite thing about you. He pulls out a piece of transfer paper and a pen, then places it on his dresser and begins drawing something. You have 5 minutes to change your mind. I watch him sketch my tattoo for the next 5 minutes, but I can't see what it is from where he's positioned. When he's done, I still haven't changed my mind. He walks to the bedroom door and locks it. If anyone sees this, you better lie and say you got it from someone else. I try to peek at it when he walks near me, but he hides it. You can't see it yet. My mouth falls open. I didn't say I'd let you tattoo something on me before it gets my approval. He grins and says, I promise you won't hate it. He has me pull my arm through my sleeve. Can I do it right here? He asks, touching the top right area of my back. I'll make it small. I nod and then close my eyes, waiting anxiously for him to begin. He's sitting on the bed with all the tattoo equipment set up beside him. I'm facing the other direction, which is actually a relief. I don't really want to have to watch him the whole time. I might be too transparent in my thoughts. He transfers the tattoo onto my skin first, then hands me a pillow to hug over the back of my chair right before he starts. The initial sting is painful, but I squeeze my eyes shut and try to focus on breathing. It's actually not as painful as I thought it would be, but it certainly doesn't feel good. I try to focus on something else, so I decide to make conversation with him. What does the tattoo on your arm mean? The one that says, your turn, doctor. I can feel a rush of warm air meet my neck when he sighs. Sagan pauses a moment until my chills subside, then he begins the tattooing process again. It's a long story, he says, trying to dismiss it again. Good thing all we have is time. He's quiet for so long as he continues tattooing me that I assume he's not going to elaborate, like always. But then he says, Remember when I told you the flag on my arm was a Syrian opposition flag? I nod. Yes, you said your father was born there. Yeah, he was. But my mother is American. From Kansas, actually. I was born there. He pauses talking for a moment while he concentrates on the tattoo, but then he continues, "Do you know anything about the Syrian refugee crisis?" I shake my head, grateful he's finally in a talkative mood. This tattoo hurts a little more than I imagined, and I need a distraction. "I've heard of it, but I don't really know much about it." "Much," meaning nothing. Sagan says, "Yeah, they don't really teach about it in schools here." He's quiet for a few more painful seconds, but then he moves to a different spot of my shoulder, and I feel some relief. He begins talking again. I do nothing but listen.
"Syria has been ruled by a dictatorship for a long time now. It's why my father moved to America for medical school. A lot of other countries around Syria are also ruled by dictators. Well, several years ago, something called the Arab Spring began. A lot of citizens in these countries began to hold protests and demonstrations to try and overthrow the dictators. The people wanted their countries to be less corrupt. They wanted them to run like more of a democracy with checks and balances. The protests were successful in Tunisia and Egypt, and the leaders stepped down. A new form of government was put in place. After that, the people of Syria and other countries were hopeful that it could happen in their countries, too."
"So the tattoo is somehow related to Syria?"
"Yeah," he says. "It's what many believe started the revolution. The Syrian ruler, Bashar al-Assad, studied to be an ophthalmologist before his father died, and he took over as the new leader of Syria. Bashar's nickname is Doctor. Well, a group of school kids spray-painted graffiti on a wall at their school with the words, 'Your turn, Doctor.' They were essentially saying what many in Syria had been quietly hoping, that the doctor would step down, just as the leaders of Egypt and Tunisia had, in order to allow for a democracy in Syria." I hold up my hand to pause him. I'm soaking all of this in, but I have so many questions.
"At the risk of sounding stupid, what year did this happen?"
2011.
"Did the doctor step down after that?"
Sagan wipes at my tattoo again and then presses the needle against my skin. I wince when he says,
"He did the opposite, actually. He had the children responsible for the graffiti imprisoned and tortured."
I start to turn around, but he puts a firm hand on my shoulder.
"He had them arrested?" I ask.
"He wanted to make a point to the people of Syria that there would be no tolerance for opposition. He didn't care that they were just kids. When the parents started demanding the release of their children, the government didn't listen. In fact, one of the officers in command said to the parents of the children, 'Forget your children, just make more children. And if you don't know how to make more, I'll send someone to show you.'"
"Oh my God," I whisper.
"I didn't say it would be a good story," he says, continuing. "Once the doctor imprisoned the kids involved, people in the city of Dara took to the streets. Protests and demonstrations started happening, but instead of being met with compromise, the government used deadly force against them. A lot of people died. This sparked nationwide protests. People demanded the doctor step down, but he refused, and instead he used military force to crack down even harder on the protesters. The violence escalated and soon turned into a civil war, which is now why there's a refugee crisis. Almost 500,000 people have died so far, and millions more have had to flee the country to save their lives."
I can't speak. I don't know what to say to him. I can't reassure him because there isn't anything reassuring about that story. And honestly, I'm embarrassed. I didn't know any of that. I see the headlines online and in the paper, but I never understand any of it. It's never directly affected me, so I've never thought to even look into it. He stopped tattooing, but I don't know if he's finished, so I don't move.
"We moved to Syria when I was 10, he says, his voice quieter. "My father is a surgeon, and he and my mother opened a medical clinic there. But after living there for a year when things started to get bad, my parents sent me back here to live with my grandparents until my father could get his visa to return home. My mother was due to give birth to my little sister, so she couldn't fly at the time. They told me it would just be 3 months, but right before they were due to fly home..."
His voice trails off. Since he's no longer tattooing me, I spin the chair around to look at him. He's sitting with his hands clasped between his knees, looking down. When he looks up at me, his eyes are red, but he's holding his composure.
Before they came home, communication just stopped. They went from calling me every day to complete silence. I haven't heard from them in 7 years.
I cover my mouth in shock. Sagan is sitting, stoically, staring at his hands again. Both of my hands are pressed against my mouth in disbelief. I can't believe this is his life. This is why he answers the phone with such urgency, because he's always hoping it will be news about his family. I can't imagine suffering through 7 years of not knowing.
I feel like such an asshole, I whisper.
My problems are nothing compared to what you've been going through. He looks up at me with completely dry eyes. I think that makes me the saddest, to know that he's so used to his life that it doesn't make him cry every second of the day. He puts his hand on my chair and says,
"You aren't an asshole, Mare."
He turns me around.
"Hold still. I'm almost finished."
We sit in silence as he finishes up my tattoo. I can't stop thinking about everything that's happening with him. It has my stomach in knots, and I really do feel like an asshole. He read a letter I wrote complaining about my entire family and our trivial issues, and he doesn't even know if his family is alive.
"Done," he whispers.
He cleans it with something cold, and then he begins to bandage it up. "Wait," I say, turning around. "I want to see it first." He shakes his head.
"Not yet. I want you to keep the bandage on until Saturday."
"Saturday? It's only Thursday."
"I want you to anticipate it a little longer," he says with a smile.
I like that he's smiling after the heaviness of the conversation, even if it is forced.
"I'll apply lotion every few hours until then."
I like the idea of that, so I reluctantly agree. "At least tell me what it is."
"You'll see what it is on Saturday."
He starts cleaning up his mess. I stand up and roll the chair back to the desk. He walks his box of supplies to his closet. As I watch him, I'm overcome by an overwhelming sense of compassion for him, for what he's going through. I walk to him and slip my arms around his waist, pressing my face against his chest. I just need to hug him after hearing all of that. And based on the way he wraps himself around me and accepts the hug without question, he must have needed it too. We stand like this for an entire minute before he presses a kiss to the top of my head.
"Thanks for that," he says, releasing me.
I nod. "Good night." He smiles appreciatively.
"Good night, Merritt."
Chapter 14.
"Are you excited about today?"
"Yes!"
Moby yells from the hallway.
"How excited?"
"So excited!"
"How excited?" Utah says.
"The most excited!"
Moby yells back. Normally that exchange would make me roll my eyes this early in the morning, but that was before last night, when I started to like Utah as a brother again. My father still doesn't know I dropped out of school, so I force myself out of bed. I brush my teeth, fix my hair, put on clothes, and go through the same routine I go through almost every morning. I would just tell him the truth, but I'm not so sure I want to deal with the aftermath right now. It feels like a lifetime has been crammed into the last few days. I'll give it another week before I tell him. Maybe two. Or, better yet, I'll tell him I dropped out when he finally explains why my mother is taking placebo pills. When I walk into the kitchen, Honor and Sagan are sitting next to each other at the table. She's laughing at something he just said, which makes me a little relieved to see her smiling. Maybe she'll stop being so mad at me now that I've made up with Utah. Or maybe not. As soon as she sees me, her smile disappears. She refocuses her attention on the smoothie in front of her, moving her straw around. At least Sagan smiles at me. I smile back and feel ridiculously cheesy when I do. Merritt, taste this, Utah says. He shoves one of his smoothies in my face and tries to stick the straw in my mouth. Gross, I say, swiping his arm and the smoothie away. I'm not tasting that crap.
It's good.
He holds it out for me again. I promise, just taste it. I take the smoothie and taste the damn thing. Sure enough, it tastes like someone took a bunch of vegetables, blended them together, and threw tasteless vitamins in the mix. I wince and hand it back to him. Disgusting.
Sucker,
Sagan says. The back door opens and my father walks in.
Something is wrong with that dog,
he says, washing dirt off his hands. He dries them on a towel.
Has he been that lethargic since he showed up?
I shrug. He looked better yesterday. I walk past him and out the back door. I can hear Sagan following me. The three of us make it to Wolfgang's doghouse, and I kneel down and touch him on the top of his head. Hey, buddy. He looks up at me with the same lack of enthusiasm he's had since he showed up Sunday night. His tail twitches again, but he makes no effort to stand up or lick me.
Has he been acting like that all week?
My dad asks. I nod just as my dad squats down. He runs his hand down Wolfgang's back, and it's honestly a sight I never thought I'd see. My father and this dog. Together, again. I thought he was just depressed, I say. I feel bad for not making more of a fuss about his temperament, but I don't know anything about dogs.
I called the vet yesterday, Sagan says. They said they could squeeze him in tomorrow, but I don't think he can wait that long.
Which vet?
My father asks.
The one out on 30 near the Goodwill?
That's close to work,
my father says. He slips his hands beneath Wolfgang.
I'll drop him off on my way in, see if they can check him out sooner.
My father nudges his head toward the gate on the side of the house.
Merritt, go open that gate so I can get him to my truck.
I run and open the gate, then I run and open the passenger door to my father's truck. He places Wolfgang in the passenger seat. Wolfgang doesn't even seem to care that he's been moved.
You think you'll be okay?
I don't know,
my dad says.
I'll let you know what they say.
He walks around to the driver's side and climbs in. He begins to back out, but he stops the truck and calls me over to his window.
I forgot to give this to you the other night when you asked for it,
he says, handing me a sack. I take it from him and watch as he continues backing out of the driveway. Once he's gone, I look down and open the sack. Inside is a trophy. I'd forgotten all about asking him for one. I pull out the trophy and it's a statue of a tennis player.
What did you win this time? Sagan asks.
I read the small plaque on the bottom of the trophy. State Tennis Champs, 2005. He laughs.
You were a little child prodigy.
He walks to his car and opens the door.
You need a ride to school today?
I narrow my eyes at him. He knows I haven't been going to school lately. Nice try. He climbs in the car.
Worth a shot,
he says, closing the door. He rolls down the window and says,
I'll text you if I get any updates about Wolfgang from your dad.
I nod, but then I tilt my head. Why would he give you updates?
Because I work for him?
You do? Wow, I'm so out of the loop. He laughs.
Did you really not know that?
I shake my head. I know you had a job, but I've just never asked what it was.
Your dad gave me a job and let me move in the first day I met him. That's why I like him so much, even though you can't stand him most of the time.
He looks over his shoulder and backs out of the driveway. Before he pulls onto the road, he gives me a small wave. I wave back and watch him drive off. I don't know how long I stand in the driveway watching the empty road. I just feel so lost? I don't know. Nothing really makes sense this week. I go back inside and spend the next several hours wasting time. I mostly watch TV, but I can't stop checking my phone for updates. I still haven't heard from my father. I've only received one text, and it was from my mother asking if I'd come to the basement sometime this afternoon. I responded to her and told her I was busy. She replied with, "Okay, maybe tomorrow." I know I said I was never going to the basement again, but I only said that because I was angry. I'll visit her eventually, but right now I'm still upset with her. And my father, still confused by how Victoria can choose to remain in such a strange marital environment. And I still don't know what the hell the placebo pills are for. I hate that I have any sort of resentment in me after hearing what Sagan's going through, but for some reason his issues haven't negated mine at all, and I hate that. I hate that I'm still emotionally affected by the poor choices of my parents when I should be lucky that I know they're alive. It makes me feel weak and petty. I kick my feet up on the kitchen table and text my father. Me. Any word from the vet? I wait to see if the text bubbles appear, but they don't. I set the phone down and pull my crossword puzzle in front of me. My phone rings, so I flip it over to check the caller ID. I smile when I see it's Sagan. Hello?
Hey.
His voice is heavy, like he had to drag the word out. What's wrong? He sighs into the phone.
Your father wanted me to call you. Wolfgang... He died on the way to the vet.
I almost dropped my phone.
What? How?
I don't know. I'm sure it was just old age.
I sigh and wipe away a surprising tear.
You okay?
Yeah,
I say, sighing again. Is my dad okay?
I'm sure he is. He did mention we might go bury him later, though. Probably at Pastor Brian's church, so I'll be later than usual. I'll text you.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know.
See you tonight.
I end the call and stare at my phone for a full 5 minutes before I moved. I'm surprised I'm sad. Other than living in the yard adjacent to the dog as a kid, I've really only interacted with him for a few days. But the last week of that poor dog's life was complete crap. His owner died, and then he walked several miles in the rain in the middle of the night, only to end up getting sick and dying in the midst of complete strangers. I'm glad they're going to bury him on Pastor Brian's property, though. I'm sure they'd both prefer it that way. I don't hear from Sagan or my father for several hours. The mood in the house is awkward at best, so I stay in my room most of the evening. Victoria doesn't even cook, so we all eat separately. I'm cleaning up the mess from my frozen dinner when Utah's phone rings. He's on the couch with Luck and Honor watching TV, but his phone is next to me on the bar.
"Who is it?"
he asks from the living room. I glance at the caller ID, but it's not a number he has saved.
I don't know, it's a local number, but there's no name. Will you answer it?
I dry my hands on a towel and reach for his phone.
Hello?
Honor?
No, it's Merritt.
Merritt,
my father says.
Where's Utah?
He's in the living room. What's up?
He sighs.
Well, we need someone to pick us up.
I laugh. Is this some kind of joke?
You own like 80 cars. Why in the world do you need a ride?
We're, in jail.
I pull the phone away from my ear and put it on speaker. I motion for Utah to mute the TV.
What do you mean you're in jail? And who is we? Is Sagan in jail too?
It's a long story. I'll tell you when you get here.
Who's in jail?
Utah asks, walking into the kitchen. I motion for him to be quiet so I can hear my father.
Do we need, like, bail money? I've never picked anyone up from jail before.
No, we just need a ride. We've been here 2 hours already waiting for them to let us make a phone call.
Okay, we're on our way.
I end the call.
Why are they in jail? Utah says.
I shrug.
I don't know. Should we tell Victoria?
Tell me what?
Victoria walks into the kitchen with impeccable timing.
Dad's in jail, Utah says, turning to face her.
With Sagan.
She pauses.
What?
Don't know what he did, but I can't wait to find out, Utah says.
Honor and Luck are now in the kitchen. We're all looking at each other like we don't know what to do.
I guess we don't.
And it's not every day we have to go pick our father up from jail.
Have him call me as soon as you pick him up, Victoria says. I have to stay with Moby.
I nod and head to my room to find my shoes. What in the world did they do?
Chapter 15.
I don't know what I was expecting, but when my father and Sagan walk out of the doors of the jail, they look normal. We've been waiting in the parking lot for over an hour for them to process their paperwork. All they would tell us was that they were arrested for desecration. I don't even know what that means. My first inclination is to rush up to Sagan and hug him, but I don't, especially in front of anyone else. Instead, I wait until he reaches the car and I discreetly squeeze his hand.
What did you guys do? Utah asks.
My father swings open the passenger door of the van.
We were trying to bury a damn dog. That's what we were doing.
He sits down and slams his door shut. We all look at Sagan, and he's got an exasperated expression on his face.
I tried to tell him it was a bad idea, he says.
Burying the dog?
Luck asks. Sagan shakes his head.
I thought we were burying him at the church, but your father had a different plan.
He didn't, Honor says in disbelief.
Didn't what? Utah says.
He wanted to bury him with Pastor Brian, Sagan says.
In a cemetery?
Luck asks.
You got arrested for desecrating a grave? I ask.
Sagan nods.
I mean, technically we were just digging a hole near Pastor Brian, but when the police catch you in a cemetery with shovels, they don't really care what the explanation is.
Holy shit, Utah says.
Get in the van,
my father yells. We all climb into the van. I end up in the back seat with Sagan, but I don't mind it. Utah cranks the van, but right before we pull out of the police station, a cruiser pulls in. My father rolls down the window.
Oh, no,
Sagan says.
What?
He nods toward the cops getting out of the car.
They're the ones who arrested us.
Dad, I say, not wanting him to do anything stupid.
What did you do with the dog?
My father asks the officers. The cop who was driving walks over to the window.
Buried him at Pastor Brian's church, he says. Same place you probably should have buried him. Yeah, well, hindsight and all that shit, my dad says.
He waves his hand to Utah.
Let's go.
Utah backs up and the cop taps the top of the hood before turning to walk toward the police station. I watch out the window as both the cops start laughing.
Great. Another rumor to pin on the Voss family, Honor says from the seat in front of us.
Technically, it's not a rumor, Sagan says. We were digging in a cemetery without a permit. It's illegal.
Honor spins around.
I know that, but now the entire town is going to think Dad was trying to exhume Pastor Brian. Everyone knows he's an atheist. Now there'll be rumors about him wanting to perform satanic rituals on his dead body.
Won't be the worst thing people have said about us,
my father says from the front seat. Honor faces forward again.
I guess it wouldn't be so bad if most of the rumors weren't true.
My father looks at her in the rearview mirror.
Are you saying you're ashamed to be a boss?
Honor sighs.
No, I'm just ashamed to be your daughter.
Oh, shit, Luck says under his breath.
My father turns around.
And why is that, Honor?
Dad, Utah says.
Give it a rest. It's been a crazy week.
Oh, I don't know, Honor says sarcastically. Maybe because you don't know the first thing about being a decent husband or father?
My father turns back around and unlocks his door. Stop the van.
What? Utah says.
No. Stop the van!
My father yells. Just stop the van, Utah, I say. If my father is about to have a nervous breakdown, I'd rather he have it outside of the van than inside of it. Utah pulls over, but before he even has the gear shift in park, my father is opening his door, climbing out of the van. We all watch, dumbfounded, as he starts kicking up gravel on the side of the road. I've never seen him this mad.
Is he okay? I ask Sagan.
Sagan shrugs.
He seemed fine after we were arrested. He even laughed about it.
Utah opens the driver's side door and walks around the car. Honor opens the side door to the van and everyone starts climbing out. Once we're all standing next to the van, my father pauses his assault on the gravel long enough to catch a breath. He waves a hand across all of us.
You think just because I'm an adult, I have it all figured out? You think I'm not allowed to make mistakes?
He's not yelling, but he certainly isn't talking with an inside voice. He begins to pace back and forth.
No matter how hard you try, things don't always turn out the way you wish they could.
Utah looks agitated.
Well, when you make poor choices, things don't usually turn out to be sunshine and roses, Dad. Maybe you should have thought about that before you cheated on Mom.
My father takes several steps toward Utah. He rushes him fast enough that Utah walks backward until he's pressed against the van.
That's what I'm talking about. You all think you know everything.
My father spins and takes several steps away from us. He brings his hands up to the back of his head and inhales several deep breaths. When he finally turns around, he's looking directly at me. Sagan puts a reassuring hand against my lower back.
Do you want to know why the pills you stole were placebo pills?
I nod, because I've been dying to know since I found out.
She isn't in pain, my father says. Your mother isn't in pain. She isn't recovering from cancer. She never even had cancer.
He walks closer to us.
Your mother never had cancer, he repeats. Let that sink in.
I can see Utah's fists clench as he takes a sudden step toward our father.
You better elaborate, because I am 5 seconds away from punching you.
My dad laughs half-heartedly and drags a frustrated hand down his face. His hands then fall to his hips.
Your mother, she has issues. She's had issues since the day she was in that car wreck.
He's not yelling anymore. Now he just looks defeated.
The brain injury, it changed her. She hasn't been the same, and I know you guys didn't know her before then, but...
His face contorts and he looks up at the sky like he's trying to hold back tears.
She was amazing. She was perfect. She was happy.
He faces the other direction so none of us can see him cry. That's one of the saddest things I've ever seen. I clasp my hand over my mouth and wait for him to gather himself. It's all I can do. When he finally does turn around, he doesn't look any of us in the eye. He stares at the ground.
Watching her change from the woman I fell in love with to someone else entirely was the hardest thing I've ever been through. Harder than trying to take care of 3 kids under the age of 2 by myself when her episodes would hit and she'd lie in bed for weeks at a time. It was harder than when she started inventing those illnesses in her head, convincing herself she was dying. Harder than when I had to have her committed and then lied to you all when I told you she was in the hospital for the cancer she was convinced she had.
He looks up at me and then on her. He finally rests his eyes on Utah.
She's not the woman I married. And yes, I know it was terrible of me to get involved with Victoria, but it happened and I can't take it back. And yes, it's terrible now when your mother has rare moments of clarity, because when she does, she realizes what her life has become, what our marriage became. And it's devastating to both of us. And it's all I can do to hold her and reassure her that I still love her, that I'll always love her.
He blows out a shaky breath and wipes his tears away.
Because I do love your mother. I always will. It's just... sometimes, things don't turn out how you want them to. And even though I'm an atheist, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't thank God that I have a wife who understands that. Victoria has lived the past 4.5 years in a house with a woman that I am still in love with. She doesn't question me when your mother needs me. Victoria doesn't correct any of you when you insult her and insinuate she's a homewrecker.
He walks to the van and reaches inside for his jacket.
I've never told any of you the truth because I didn't want any of you to judge your mother. But I didn't cheat on your mother when she was dying of cancer. She was never dying. She's not dying now. She's sick, yes, but not in a way that any of us can help her.
He puts on his jacket and zips it up.
I'm walking home.
He begins to head away from the van, toward our house that's still over 3 miles away. He pauses and faces us again.
All I've ever wanted was for you kids to have the opportunity to love a mother like you deserved. To think the world of her. That's all Victoria's ever wanted for you.
He starts walking backward.
I just had no idea how much you would all hate me in the process.
He spins around again and starts walking in the direction of the house. I can hear Honor crying. I even hear Utah crying. I wipe away my own tears and try to inhale a breath that will sustain me for more than 2 seconds. I think we're all in shock. It's several minutes before any of us move. My father is long out of sight by the time Utah regains his composure enough to speak.
Get in the van,
he says. He walks around to the driver's side and climbs in, but none of us move. He honks the horn and then hits the steering wheel.
Get in the damn van!
Luck takes the front seat and the rest of us climb in the back. Before Sagan even has the door closed, Utah is peeling out, doing a U-turn.
Where are we going? Honor asks him.
We're going to bury that damn dog with Pastor Brian.
Chapter 16
Pastor Brian's newer church is much bigger than his old one, the one we live in. I don't feel so bad that my dad bought it all those years ago. Pastor Brian seems to have upgraded. Well, until he died. Hurry up, Honor says. Sagan is digging the fresh dirt off Wolfgang's grave. Utah is at the end of the driveway keeping watch. Luck is... oh my God. Are you picking your nose? Luck wipes his fingers on his shirt and shrugs. You're so gross, Honor says. She glances at me and mutters under her breath, I can't believe you almost had sex with him. I ignore her insult. I don't feel like getting into another fight with her when 3 out of 5 of us are holding the brand new shovels we bought on the way here. That wouldn't end well. I also don't argue with her because, well, I can't believe I almost had sex with him either.
Got it, Sagan says.
He bends down and starts moving the dirt away from the sheet that Wolfgang is wrapped in.
Luck, give me a hand.
Luck shakes his head.
No way, man. There's got to be some bad karma attached to what you're doing. I want no part in it.
Oh, for crying out loud. I bend down and help Sagan dig Wolfgang the rest of the way out of the dirt. Sagan is able to lift and carry him to the van on his own. I open the back door and he puts him inside the van.
I need to put the dirt back on his grave so no one is suspicious, Sagan says.
You're getting really good at this criminal life, I tease. Sagan grins and closes the back door to the van.
Do you find hardened criminals attractive?
He raises his brow, and the obvious flirtation has my heart spinning in my chest. I hear Honor groan as she passes us. I hate this already. Sagan rolls his eyes and then walks back to the side of the church to refill the grave.